to it. And not only will be first time, this time this bride. Or did we increase something?
We
did. Yeah, that's the first night. Annual assessment, the infrastructure, the song piece. Fine, thank you. I'll hand over to you,
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity. We'll be making the first presentation will be on the 2011 annual national assessment. Some members were present in Pretoria at the time of the announcement of the results. So our presentation will cover some of those areas, but we will focus on what has occurred since the results have been released, and in particular that those pieces of information that you had requested for last week. And the presentation will be made by Dr. Rufus Paul.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Myself. And we're going to look at this. Did you want? This one. What we look at Anna. Why do you look at this? Is it the song we look at?
The presentation will be the one that the chair, the honorable chair.
But why?
The one that's in the pack is the official document that was used for the release, which is the formal one that is on record, as well as a document that looks at the utilization of the result and its interpretation at different levels in the system.
Doctor, you might
start.
Yes, good
morning, Honourable Chair and members, thank you once again for this opportunity. As indicated by Mr. Pagliacci, the House would have received a sense of this presentation, so I'm going to try and go through the initial part of the presentation quite rapidly. But this is an indication of the outline of the presentation, and my focus would be on the qualitative analysis that has been done since the release. Just by way of introduction, Chair, to mention that annual national assessment is a critical assessment tool which supports the Department's action plan to 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2025. Also, one needs to be reminded that in terms of the Minister's delivery agreement, one of the key deliverables will be the establishment of standardized national assessment. And therefore, the annual national assessment would become one of the fundamental driving programs of the Department of Education. And I think one needs to establish the difference between annual national assessment as it was implemented in 2011 to previous national assessments that were conducted. And I think there are two fundamental differences. And the first difference is that this is the first time in the history of this country that we have a standardized measurement tool that was administered to all learners across grades 1 to 6. Previously, the assessments that were conducted were either at grade 3 level or grade 6 level, and they were focusing on a sample of learners. Now, the purpose for having introduced a tool that cuts across all learners was for us to be able to diagnose learner problems using a standardized tool. Because one could very well have different teachers conducting their own assessments and diagnosing their problems. But one cannot guarantee the validity or the reliability of that kind of diagnosis because one is never sure that that instrument is reliable. But in the case of a standardized tool that's written by all learners across the whole country, one is then guaranteed that the outcome, the analysis, the diagnosis is applicable to that particular school simply because it's an instrument that has been standardized. And the second reason this particular intervention is critical is that I think in the last few years, government has in the main been focusing on the FET ban. And this is now significant of the change in thrust with regards to focusing on teaching and learning below grade 12. Much emphasis has been made on performance at the grade 12 level and the outcome of the grade 12 exam. But we've now come to realize that unless we get the basics in terms of the general education and training in place, we cannot expect to have a better outcome at the grade 12 level. And also to mention that ADA is a large-scale adaptation of the sample-based systemic evaluation, which was run in 2001, 2004, and 2007. And also just to mention, Chair, that annual national assessment supports three of the critical goals relating to increasing the number of learners in grade 3, grade 6, and grade 9 who would improve their competency levels in numeracy and literacy, or in the case of language and math. It's also important, Chair, to be reminded that we have a baseline target which was set based on the tests that were conducted in 2004 and 2007, and this slide provides us with the baseline. We refer to them as 2009 baseline, but obviously they were targets that were derived from assessments conducted prior to 2009. And one needs to keep in mind that our target for 2014 is 60% in terms of literacy and numeracy across these grades. And I think it's important also, Chair, to understand that annual national assessment will become a cornerstone of quality improvement in South African schools, providing important information on learning and its context. So this will become a feature of the national education system. But also I think we need not fool ourselves to think that we would be able to have a fully functional annual national assessment program in its first year of implementation. We've looked at trends internationally, and one finds that in developed countries, it has taken them something like 5 years to put together a reliable and valid system of national assessment. So the fact that we've experienced problems in our first year of implementation is a direction that is indicative that we are moving forward. But obviously, there is a road that we need to walk before we get to the final outcome that we're looking at. And in terms of the credibility of this entire process, there are four critical aspects that we are focusing on. We must make sure that instrument that we set, whether it be grade 3, numeracy, or literacy, that instrument is internationally comparable, that instrument does not disadvantage a learner. It's fair to every learner, irrespective of the context he or she comes from. We must also make sure that when the instrument is administered, that it is administered under the same condition across the whole country. We cannot have learners being biased in a particular context or favored in terms of their responses. That therefore means that the context is creating an unfair situation for certain learners. The marking. Now, to make sure that this instrument is marked across the whole country in a standardized manner is a challenge. And therefore, if you look at the way the assessment was structured, is that we selected the scripts of selected learners, which was then marked centrally by an outside body to confirm the validity of that marking. And lastly, the most important part is the analysis. I mean, one does not conduct assessment for the sake of assessment, but one conducts assessment so that one comes up with information that can feed back into teaching and learning. And I think this is going to be an ongoing process because we have a mine of data that needs to be analyzed and made available schools and teachers. And very quickly, Chairperson, just to remind ourselves again of the purpose of ANA. ANA serves as a diagnostic tool, as I mentioned, but it also to expose teachers to good assessment practices. So they could compare the instruments that they developed to the instruments that were developed by the Department of Basic Education nationally. It provides districts with with information to target schools in need of assistance. I think we've come to realize that it cannot be one size fits all. We need to have a differentiated approach based on the performance of learners in particular schools. And we also say that we should not only just focus on schools that are performing poorly. What about schools that do well? And I think there's possibly a lack of this celebratory spirit in our country. We tend to focus on the negative, and we sometimes forget about schools that are doing well. And I think that annual national assessment is an opportunity to affirm schools that have done well so that they can reach for better and higher standards. It's also about bringing parents into the entire process, because now parents are getting results which are based on a national assessment. It empowers them and provides them with information about their children, because every parent will receive the outcome of the annual national assessment. And I think as a department, we are quite open in saying that there were limitations in the administration of this process. And firstly, we are saying that there is much work still to be done, Chair, in terms of making sure that that assessment instrument is comparable from year to year, so that when we compare performance over years, we are comparing apples with apples. We're also saying that we will make sure that these instruments are internationally comparable, so that when we say that the learner performance in literacy is at a particular level, it means that it's in terms of our international standing with regard to literacy and numeracy. We also agree that possibly there were problems in the way some of the questions were translated. And remember, language is a critical issue in this country. And I don't think we can ever say that we've paid much attention to language and making sure that the question and the way it has been formulated is not an impediment or a barrier to the learner responding. Also, we are agreeing that not all schools would have followed the prescribed procedures, although this was clearly articulated, and we think that we will monitor this more closely in future years. And lastly, or not lastly, but penultimately, marking, which I spoke about already. And lastly, it's about collecting the data from all schools across the country and making sure that we put that together and that the data we put together is clean data so that we have national data that is responsible if or has been another challenge. Now, this slide gives you a sense of the verification, Anna. Like I said, particular schools were selected, and that data was verified, and that's the data that I will be reporting on, because that is data that has been checked, it has been confirmed, and it is data that is dependable. And this data covers 19,470 grade 3 learners and 19,397 grade 6 learners who come from just over 800 schools across the country. And these are the maximum marks, just for your information. And this slide gives us the grading scale that is used in the case of the GET band. When we talk about level 1, we're referring to scores less than 25%, level 2, scores between 25 and 50%, level 3, at least 50%, but below 70, and level 4, above 40%. And Chair, just to remind the House again, that these were the average scores across the country per province in terms of numeracy and literacy, and I'm focusing specifically on grade 3 and grade 6. And in terms of our national performance, which is not encouraging, in terms of literacy, our mean score for grade 3 stands at 35%, and numeracy, 28%, language, 28% in the case of grade 6, and 30% in the case of mathematics. Now, as much as we say that the performance is not where it should be, but I think what it does, it confirms previous assessments that were conducted by international bodies, and I think it gives us a good point from which to start. And I think if one looks at the provincial performance, It in a sense affirms the performance of our provinces as we understand it. I think this is an interesting slide as well, Chairperson, because it compares the performance of boys versus girls. And here again, the trend is being confirmed that girls are doing better in grade 3 literacy. They're also doing better in grade 3 numeracy. And they are doing better in grade 6 language compared to boys, as well as in grade 6 mathematics. And I think as much as this is a positive for performance of girls, but we need to establish why the boys are not performing just as better or just as well or even better than the girls.
Exactly. Someone just said it's a clear idea, and I think they're going to get lost and don't, you know, ask the question. And have you asked that the clear idea?
Yes, that is the chair.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to speak out. I've forgotten in my research, I think I did do things that mean cause, but I've forgotten what it means. What's the mean score?
The mean score is the average. It simply means you take the scores of all the learners and you divide that by the number of learners in that group. So for example, if there are 30 learners in the class and you total up the scores of each of the individual learners and that gives you a total and you divide that by 6. So it's the average. It's an indication of what the average performance of the learners in that class group or nationally is.
For instance, in KZN, can you call it? I'm sorry, Chair. KZN, the mean score is 39.
That would be 39 out of 100. 39%. So it means that most of the learners that in KZN got a score below 50%. The average score would have been 39. The bulk of the learners would have got a score in the vicinity of between 30 and 40.
Learners
in the main, the majority of learners. You would have learners that have got scores above 39 and below 39, but the bulk of the learners would have got scores in the region of between 30 and 40.
Sure.
And just some general points in terms of marking. It was interesting, Chair, to find that the marking of the script by our teachers did not differ drastically from the controlled marking that was done by the external body. It would simply mean that our teachers at school level are marking fairly accurately. There are individual schools where teachers tend to either over or under mark learners, but in general, teachers mark and the marks conducted by the external body were more or less the same. And I think this is important in terms of also building the capacity of our teachers in terms of their marking ability. In terms of specific points relating to learner performance, I think generally we can say that in all four of the ANAP tests, and that's the numeracy, literacy in grades 3 and 6, and this is an important point, that over half of all learners in the country perform at a level that indicates that they have clearly not achieved the competencies specified in the curriculum. So that's alarming, that more than 50% of our learners are not meeting the minimum competency level. In grade 6, the results indicate that around 70% of the learners fall into this category. At the top end, very few learners are able to achieve outstanding results. For instance, only 3% of learners in grade 6 mathematics can be considered outstanding. And I'll provide you with the detail, and that's seen on this graph. I must apologize, Chairperson, that I don't think the colors can be seen clearly. But what this graph is showing us, it's indicating the performance in grade 3 literacy. And we're looking at it per province. Now, the bottom dark green talks or refers to learners that have scored at the highest level, which is your level 4. In other words, they scored above 70%, the dark green. Then the slightly lighter green would be learners that scored between 50 and 70%. And then the yellowish mustard would be learners that scored below 50%. And I think that which you are concerned about, members, would be the red, the last part of the earth, which would in fact be the top part of the graph. Now, if one looks across all provinces, the red is in the majority. That seems to constitute the larger part of the Vargha, which means that most of our learners are scoring below that particular point, which means that they are scoring at level 4, which is below 35%. Now that is cause for concern. And the figures at the bottom give you the percentages in terms of outstanding. For example, if you look at Eastern Cape, 10% are scoring at the outstanding level, 27% at the achieved level, which means that they're scoring between 50 and 70, partially achieved, which means they're scoring above 35, and then those that are scoring at the lowest level, which is the not achieved, is the 45%. But I think the figure that we are all interested in is the national level, which I refer to as SA, and that gives you the performance at the grade 3 level in terms of literacy. And if one looks at grade 3 numeracy, one finds that the pattern is the same in terms of the red part of the graph being that the bulk of where our learners are positioned, which therefore means that most of our learners are performing at the lower end, which is an indication of them not having the desired competency in grade 3 numeracy. The same applies with grade 6 language, and if you look at grade 6 language, it simply means that 3% of our learners are performing at the outstanding level, and the bulk of our learners are at the lower end. And the same in terms of grade 6 mathematics. This chairperson is also a very interesting slide. What we've done, we've categorized our learners in terms of the 5 quintiles. And in each of the quintile categories across the whole country, we identified schools which are demonstrating potential. And if one looks at the first column, in the case of grade 3 literacy, we are saying that there are 45% of schools which are showing promise or have the potential of performing at a level which would be regarded as being competent. And there are 17% of the schools that are struggling, which means that they have scored below 35%. And if one goes down the line in terms of quintile 1 in the first column, it means that in the case of grade 3 numeracy, we have 19% of the schools that are showing promise. In the case of grade 6 languages, we have 13% of the schools that are showing promise. And in grade 6 mathematics, there are 13% of the schools that are showing promise. And it's interesting, Chairperson, that in quintile 1 and quintile 2, and specifically in the case of literacy, there are high percentage of schools which, given the kind of correct support and motivation, these schools could improve their performance drastically. And one can go up the scale and even look at the grade 3 and the grade 4, that we have a large percentage of schools that are on the borderline, and given a little bit of a push, they can provide the kind of competency demonstration that we would require as a system. And then, Chairperson, just to give you a sense of the performance in the universal manner. Now, the word universal was used for all schools in the country that wrote the test from grade 1 to 6. But the data that I presented you thus far was for those that were verified by the outside body. But that data, we can regard as being valid. But we're also giving you a sense of how did the performance in terms of all schools across the country. And here we're providing you a sense of the data from grade 1 to grade 6 in terms of literacy and in the case of numeracy. Now, they don't differ drastically from what we found in the verification data, but there are differences. And one would expect such differences simply because this is unverified data. And I think it's important to note, Chairperson, that performance, for example, in the case of literacy, in grade 1, our learners are performing at a mean score of 80%. But when you get to grade 2, the performance drops to 74%. Grade 3, there's a substantial drop to 55. And then if you look at grade 4, there's an even greater drop. Now we can explain the drop from grade 3 to grade 4 because of the change in the language of teaching and learning. But what is interesting, Chair, that from 5 to 6, there is an improvement. Would simply mean that there's something going on in the grade 3, 4, and 5, but in grade 6, the performance begins to pick up. And we're hoping that when we move to the next assessment and we do grade 9, we find that there's a general trend of improvement in performance as we move up to the higher grade. So the same trend that you find in the case of grade 3, in the case of literacy, also applies in the case of numeracy, where there's a decline in performance from grade 1 to grade 6. And this gives you an indication of the mean score across the whole country, and one can get a sense of what the mean scores are in terms of numeracy and literacy. And it ranges from 59 to 33 in the case of literacy, and 63 to 31 in the case of numeracy. This is a table, Chairperson, which merely gives you the range of performance in terms of level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. But I think, again, our concern is that in terms of level 4, that's where we have not many of our learners being located in that category. For example, in the case of literacy, we find that only 18.9% of all the learners are located in that particular grade. And the bulk of our learners are found below level 3, which means they are located in level 1 and 2. So what are the trends that we're picking up? Preliminary findings show that learners in grade 1 to 5 perform progressively less well, and I think I highlighted that again. Notably, the results for grade 1 and 2 in both literacy and numeracy are very promising, and I think that was quite clear. Factors contributing to relatively good results in grades 1 and 2 is based on the expansion of RADAR. And I think as a department, we've done extremely well in terms of our interventions with regard to the ECT program. And I think that's now beginning to bear fruit in terms of what we're seeing in grade 1 and 2. Also, I think the foundations for learning intervention in numeracy and literacy is now beginning to produce the kind of outcome that we now see in grade 1 and 2. In terms of the other results, I think I mentioned that the low performance in grade 3 compared to grade 2 may be attributed to the fact that the above interventions were not present to scale in time to have an impact on this grade. So we're hoping that as we improve the foundation of learning to other grades, that we will see the impact higher up. And I think I spoke about the low performance in grade 4 to grade 3, and this is because of the switch in terms of mother tongue instruction to the language of learning and teaching, and this issue has been clearly identified and it's being addressed in the curriculum review process. So overall, I think the mean learner performance in literacy in grade 6 is lower than in grade 3. In the case of numeracy, and specifically with regard to grade 3, learners' mean performance in numeracy was lower compared to performance in literacy. More learners perform at level 1, in other words, not achieved, compared to performance in literacy. So we're having a greater sense of underperformance in numeracy than in literacy. And this is in keeping with previous studies. In the case of grade 3 literacy, 53% of grade 3 learners perform at level 1, not achieved, while 11% perform at level 4. And I think this is in keeping with what I've been saying already. Grade 6, I think we saw that 70% perform at level 1, 3% at level 6, sorry, at level 4. Grade 6 in mathematics, learner performance in mathematics is similar to that of language at the grade 6 level. And I think I spoke about the performance of girls. And now, Chair, to get to the qualitative analysis, which I think the House is more interested in. What we've done, Chair, is we've taken scripts of learning and we have gone through a sample of the script to find out exactly where do the problems lie? It's well and good to talk about averages and means, and I think that is good for planners in terms of understanding how the system is doing as a whole. But for the teacher in the classroom, for the parent, he or she wants to know exactly in language, exactly in mathematics, where is my son or daughter having a problem, and how exactly can I assist them in that particular subject area. And these are some of the findings which I think will be very interesting, is that firstly, handwriting. Too many learners across the system have not yet developed the basic skill of writing properly and legibly. And because they cannot write properly and in a legible manner, it's sometimes difficult to establish what they have written. So one is not sure whether the problem is the handwriting or whether the problem is that they lack the knowledge and the skills and were not able to express that properly in terms of the writing that was required. So we see that handwriting, which is a basic requirement, needs to be emphasized across all our schools. Learners are unable to read and follow written instructions. When one looks at the responses that they provide, then you realize that the response is totally out of sync with what was required from the question. Would simply mean that they did not understand the question. So that brings us back to the basic skill of comprehension. Learners lack what we call word treasure. In other words, basic vocabulary. One expects that a learner at a particular level has a certain group of words that he is able to utilize. But one is finding, for example, that at the grade 3 level, that our learners are unable to express themselves because of the lack of knowledge of those basic words that they need to have access to. Then we are also finding, Chairperson, that the rate at which learning occurs is low, or learning is taking place at a slow pace. So it's not that learning is not taking place, but it's taking place at a very slow pace. And one would assume that the slow pace of learning is because there is a backlog. A teacher has to first deal with the basics that the learner should have acquired in the previous grade, and therefore learning pace becomes slightly slower than anticipated. Learners in higher grades display learning deficiencies in basic literacy and numeracy skills. So we find that many of our learners in grades 4, 5, and 6 are actually performing at a level, possibly at level 3 or level 2 in terms of numeracy and literacy. So those are the general findings, Chairperson, and now I'm going to go to some of the specific findings relating to numeracy and literacy. Now, we know that subtraction, multiplication, and division are fundamental. But we are finding that our learners are struggling to handle basic numeracy operations. So it's the basic operations that are not there. Fractions is something that learners have not mastered the concept of what is a fraction. And one picks this up when they have to compare smaller fractions with larger fractions. And if one looks at fractions, if you look at the denominator is confusing because the denominator could be large, but that does not mean that that's the larger fraction. I mean, that is possibly the smaller fraction. So those kind of concepts have not been mastered in the minds of our learners. And the misconceptions in terms of fractions, Chairperson, become more pronounced when you have to ask learners to operate with mixed numbers. And when I talk about a mixed number, I'm talking about a figure like 3 1/4. So you've got a whole number and a fraction. And they find difficulty in managing that. And it becomes even more complicated when you ask them to subtract two mixed numbers, 3 1/4, and you know, from 5 1/8. Okay. So handling that kind of mixed numbers becomes too difficult for them. The other problem is word problems. Being able to translate problems that are given into words in order to enable them to solve problems using mathematical techniques. For example, if you had to give them a problem to say that you went to the shop and you had to buy yourself a loaf of bread and you had to buy a pint of milk and you had 50 rand, how much change should you expect? Now, those kinds of problems which are provided in a word would then have to be translated into mathematical operations is what they experience difficulty with. Now, these are just some of the problems that we have listed. I mean, I could possibly spend the whole afternoon here, but just to give the house a sense of what are the kinds of problems. In the case of literacy, general Latin basic literacy skills, including basic grammar. And when we talk about basic grammar, we're talking about issues of spelling, we're talking about proper use of language form, for example, the use of prepositions, plural, using the correct tense, in terms of word opposites. All these are basic literacy skills which are not there. I spoke about the lack of vocabulary, and we are saying that the lack of vocabulary arises because of inadequate exposure to reading. I mean, that's the only way you could improve on vocabulary is by exposure to reading. Poor comprehension skills, and we find that in the case of comprehension, is that if you give them a text, and you give them a question which requires a one-word answer, and if that one word has to come from the text, that they can pick up very easily. But they are unable to respond to questions that demand complex skills, where it requires some kind of inferential reading, where you have to make inferences. In other words, you have to read between the lines, where there's some sense of comprehension. If you have to ask them a why question, why does this particular event happen? Or if you have to ask them, what do you think about this that happened, which requires some of their own kind of inferential thinking. Or if you have to ask them to state in your own words, which requires some kind of creativity, then you find that learners are totally stumped. So we are saying that the whole sense of creative writing needs to be emphasized. Because if you gave them a picture and ask them to describe what's in the picture, then they have a problem. So that kind of skill is certainly lacking. So these are some of the problems that we picked up in literacy and numeracy, and that also kind of cuts across all the grades, but obviously at different levels in terms of literacy and numeracy. Chairperson, the last part of my presentation is the next step. I'm not going to spend too much of time on, because I'm sure you are aware, and the minister has included this in her speech, and we've spoken about this quite often. So I think just to say that the campaigns and the interventions and the programs that have been started by the Department of Education would be strengthened, would be enhanced, and we think that the revision of the curriculum in terms of CAP is a step in the right direction. The fact that we are now reducing the number of subjects in the intermediate phase from 8 to 6 is going to reduce the workload for our learners, and we think that they will be able to perform better. And I think a very important intervention is the language of learning and teaching now being introduced at grade 1 level rather than at grade 3 level as is currently the case. And we think that will improve proficiency in the language, and that will improve performance. And I have a list of, for example, we're looking at coming up with exemplar assessment items which can be shared with schools. And I spoke about the introduction of English. Very important is the learner-friendly literacy and numeracy workbook to every learner in grades 1 to 2. And I think this is a critical intervention which we already are seeing is beginning to produce the desired kind of outcome. And the fact that this is now going to be given to every learner from grade 1 to 6, I think it's just going to move the system forward in terms of literacy and numeracy. And in 2012, we think workbooks will also be distributed to learners in grade 7 to 9. And the workbooks are available in the appropriate language of learning and teaching. The teacher development programs we've spoken about NEDU, strengthening performance management, putting in place performance agreement at school level. And I think that's where I want to stop for now, Chairperson, and say that the 2011 annual national assessment will serve as a vital baseline, which will forever give us an indication of where we are, provide us with the actual areas where there are difficulties and challenges, and we will then be able to come up with clear programs of what needs to be done at the classroom level. But I think my final message is that the battle in terms of numeracy and literacy cannot be won by the Department of Basic Education on their own. This is in fact a call to action from all sectors of the South African community. For parents, educators, the private sector, children themselves, we are called to action to work together in support of basic education and the future of South African children. Thank you very much.
Thanks to our doctor for the very comprehensive input and for very easy to listen to and even to read off what we just went through. Like our sitting here going just further and further, we came to the next step. Are there any questions from the honourable members? We start with the honourable Hanyako, honourable Smile, honourable Rafaela, honourable Fatana, Shuana, Mani, and even Panchana. And then if they don't take my question, then the next is mine. Any questions from you, Mrs. Honourable Daddy? Fine. Honourable, in that order, please. We start with Honourable.
Like soft, yes?
B.
Yes. We're going back to order. Okay. But still, I'm asking a question.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, this is very, very interesting. And, you know, you feel like you're back in the classroom. And you are a very good teacher. You know, I've been listening to you, and really, I wish we could give you more time to go into finer details about this. We personally have enjoyed it. And the only issue that I want to raise is about marking. I think you remember, maybe I don't know if you were here, when the first report was given, it was indicated that the marks given by the teachers differed from the marks by independent markers. I think you touched on that. Although, I think in your own way, you did not emphasize it. You said the difference is very minor. But in the last report that we got, I think it wasn't as small as you indicated. And I think that is one thing that we really need to look at very, very seriously. Because what it tells us is, if the independent markers give better marks than the teachers who teach in the classroom, what it indicates is that perhaps the teachers keep strictly to the memorandum. Anything that does not appear on the memorandum is wrong, which means you don't have competent markers, because a competent marker will not only depend on the answers given on the memorandum, because he has the knowledge. You know, there are certain things that are not in the memorandum that are correct, and he will give credit to them. That is, you know, the way we look at it. But at any rate, I think this needs to be looked at, because one can even think of the great 12 learners. If our markers at the marking center, I used to say in our meetings that some students fail in the classroom, some fail in the exam room, but there is also a small portion that fails at the marking center. And it is this group that fails at the marking center that we are concerned about, because they have passed in the classroom, they have passed in the exam room, but it is at the marking center where they fail. Now, if you fail at the marking center, you have not really failed. Somebody has failed you. So I think this issue of marking is very, very crucial. And again, just to add, when you speak about handwriting, it's very interesting. You know, this is a very, very interesting
a discussion. If learners exchange their books, I don't know if it's still done. If learners exchange their books at a lower level, it is a sin. But if they exchange at a higher level, because we believe that at a higher level, you know, they can write well, we will not worry very much. But at a lower level, it's a serious matter because nobody can correct. I mean, if a learner exchange, if I exchange my books with his books and then the teacher sits there and then we do the marking, I don't think those learners can really see errors with handwriting. So at a lower level, really every book must be marked by the teacher because it can then identify wrong things and correct wrong things. That's what I wanted to say about the marking. The last one is about the administration of the instrument. Have you said something about it? And I just want to add that this is very, very crucial that the administration be, you know, uniform throughout. In other words, our people who administer the test must be thoroughly trained so that, what one does in one school should be the same as what one is done in another school. What is done in one province must be the same as what is done in another province. But you emphasize this. I'm just making a comment to indicate that this is very, very, very crucial. Marking and administration are very, very crucial. So I think the department would have to give more, you know, attention to this to make sure that our markers do their work well, our administrators of the test really stick to the instructions. Because normally it is when one deviates from the instructions that we begin to confuse the learner. But if you keep strictly to the instructions that are given, you will come out with better results. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Sir.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I'm so happy that my colleague and a very senior colleague has spoken. So a lot of my questions have been dealt with. But I want to start by just making a comment and say that I will take up the challenge in the conclusion part to say that all South Africans need to do something. And you have excluded politicians. And maybe whilst my colleague was speaking, I thought maybe the two of us or myself would go back to classroom to mathematics. Why I'm saying this? Because I've understood from teachers, Mother Anna, that there's a problem in mathematics, for instance. When you give a simple instruction, like simplify 3 over 6, then the learner first have a problem to read simplify. What now about understanding what should be done, the mathematical operation? Now you see, if you cannot read simplify, you will have difficulty even to manage what should happen after. So that observation of you is so spot on, and we need to do something about it. So, we've got to do something, and the ENA test is for the first time, but there is a lot of improvement and work to be done. Now, to my questions. And maybe it's not a question, it's also a comment. The analysis part of the ENA is very important. And it needs to be sort of made more. Whilst I appreciated what you said and the way you conducted the presentation, you reminded me of a Shulet governor in the Eastern Cape, who is the director of curriculum delivery in the Eastern Cape. And I think we need to just to simplify this to whoever it must, the analysis part, so that it is understood fully. And because why I'm saying that, if we appreciate the analysis, then all of us will understand what to do to improve learning and teaching, and in the end, to improve the quality of education. Because if we don't up our game in terms of the standards in the what's happening in the classroom, then the ENA will every time give us the same results. chairperson, then the next one. And my colleague has dealt with the marking, but I just have a question. Well, before I do that, also on simplifying the analysis. Somewhere in the presentation, even the booklet, is there a table where I can see UA, the universal assessment, and the VA, you know, in a table form, and then the deviation, so that, you know, you can conclude for yourself what is happening, because there is a deviation. Then, Chairperson, with regard to the marking, I do understand it's the first time. And I just want to ask a question with regard to the, when you see the teachers undermarked and some overmarked, then to me, I have a question about the memorandum or the two that say you must mark this way. So there must be something about the memorandum that you know can be done to improve that we have a sort of standard for a universal outcome of the marking and not you know this under and over marking. It's important to have it because otherwise we will continue to have interpretations by the market itself that they want to implement for their own, you know, maybe their own benefit or just to make sure that they could have good results or whatever the case is. Yeah, Chairperson, those are the questions. Thank you very much.
I think the others of the comments, but for one very question directed to you, is generally understood in our country that because we providing equal education in our view, and somehow the tests are supposed to be treated equally and taking as a measurement to everybody, wherever they are. Sufficient standardization which treats everybody fairly. But in some studies, it does point out that even if kids are in the same class, starting say grade 1 together up to grade 12, in the process, there is possibility of gap widening between them. That is that factors that account for their background, from their homes and so on and so forth, or their socioeconomic status of their family, can as well play a role in what they end up becoming. So even if they're in the same club, taught by the same teachers and so on, and you come to test them, the possibility that some may not perform better compared to the others. So, there are still a lot of things that we may want to deal with, rather than to just say, because we testing them using the same instrument necessary, there's some equality and so on and so on. I think we've got that the second, the on the presentation, it's not paid, but probably it's supposed to be paid care. It's the first one, the cover page is number that one. The analysis of the education analysis. I think if I were to ask, probably I don't understand what you said that you can just have a second bite on it, just to explain what that is. The third issue is that you type on what is key to us. You type on what is key to us that we want to hear. But probably the management of the system or this test quite a bit their own challenges other than the student part or the learner part, that's whether they perform or do not perform. Something which you yourself should be able to
think, and it's not very much on that other than that some people find they have issues in terms of marking and so on. And generally, the administration of the problem might have had its own challenges, which we may want to be aware of. The last but one, I think that once we got to know the challenges that are in place, the tests themselves are not just for those challenges, but for the possible intervention. And now that we've got these results, these are the interventions. All the presentation is mostly in the form of statements that we are aware of the following, and the following things will need to be fixed. And I think what is key is to know at what point do we intervene, because we know we're proceeding class, and we're proceeding, they're going to the second standard with time. And the intervention becomes key and immediate. It's not something we can sit and say, no, we know they're not performing well last year in grade 3, grade 6, and we're testing them in grade 9. You need immediate intervention. It means the kind of programs that you have may possibly change, because now they must focus on what you got in class. For instance, state wants to deal with the continuum or to manage continuum teacher, professional teacher development. All it means is that it's key, chairperson, that once we get to know certain challenges which emanate even from the teachers themselves, if we see that performance from learners who can't deal with simple exercise of mathematics, it tells you more about teacher development than the learners themselves. Now, it means it's already we've got a problem to deal with in that direction. And we can't continue just doing things as usual. In terms of the program that we had, Parliament appropriated particular money for particular programs. But if you have got these challenges, immediately you must change your thinking. To say, no, we cannot continue like this, we want them to perform. But we want them ultimately to succeed in the term. And we're starting from all the other standards, those that have been identified. So I'm just saying, initially we used to check grade 12. And now I've got an opportunity to change from 3, 6, 9 and 12. And it means once you identify a problem, you can't live another year with that with this chance without fixing it as the chance progresses. On a lighter note, Chair, I just want to know if there has not been any standardization on this test that this test of what is it called? Difficult and therefore
Honourable Sasana.
Much has been said by honourable member who spoke before me. But Chairperson, I must thank the presentation. This is a very wonderful presentation and it is well presented before us. But Chairperson, the presentation must go hand in glove with the practicality, because the practical is needed on this matter. I just presented before us here. Chairperson, what we are discussing here, or what is presented before us here, is the present and the past, which means the legacy of the system in the past brought us where we are now. All along, there were no assessments in the school. There was a learner, there was a teacher, 22 years, there were no assessments. But now, it's an assessment of how to go forward with our education system. Chairperson, I must say, administratively, the department is doing very well. Their plans are very well, it's only implementation on what they are presenting before us here. But when you look to the infrastructure, vis-a-vis with the administration, there's a huge gap, Chairperson. For instance, in the rural areas, we've got schools who do not have any educational center. It's just a school. After school, the learners are just going to play even in the street. That's where a problem lies, which means the department at the administrative level and the political hierarchy of this country must make sure that we speed up the process of infrastructure. It's fundamental to the purpose. Particularly the libraries at schools. There are schools who do not have libraries. There are many in the area. In fact, some of them, they do have classrooms, but they can't establish libraries at schools. Which means we need to start from there. Our infrastructure should start from the libraries at schools. In the schools where they've got a space to initiate libraries, and we must develop those libraries by putting in the resources inside those classrooms or inside of those buildings to make sure that the learners are exposed to learning situations. The learners, they can't just be exposed in the classroom, and after the classroom there is nothing else that they can see in front of their eyes in relation to learning situations. And Jefferson, I must say, if the department and the community can join hands, and learners, and all structures join hands on this matter, shipping will achieve, Jefferson. We'll achieve what we want as a country. But also what I can say is that, Jefferson, a monitoring and evaluation is fundamental on this matter. If you initiate something and find some loopholes and challenges, as we are dealing with those challenges, we must all the time put a monitoring mechanism in place and evaluate your progress. Are we decreasing or increasing on what we are doing? If this year we did not achieve a specific goal that was put forward as a department, then by next year, we must get something else. If we get lower than what we achieved this year, then you must know that we've got a problem. The management system, at the national, provincial, district and branches, where you name them, second, at school, principals and those HOTs and deputy principals are doing the same as what you are doing. After you've evaluated this problem, are you giving them your research work so that they can learn from that research work and take it from there and go forward? Jefferson, in a nutshell, I should think if we can deal with this matter, all of us, and make sure that we put our strength on the identified problem, then we'll achieve our objective. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and allow me to thank the department once again for this comprehensive report. Comprehensive, but I'm coming to ask questions why I believe I do not understand. I should believe, Chairperson, that this is a fact to universally acknowledge that if you give a report, it should total to 100%, unless if I'm mistaken. And I do not, it's not a big challenge if other people, not the Department of Education, come and give us reports in Parliament, and if you calculate, it's 110%, 100%. It makes no sense to me, my understanding is that the total should be 100%. But I'm looking at your learner performance and specific matters, and I think in the Eastern Cape, whatever you have given us, they not achieved, you partially achieved, you achieved outstanding. They end up at 99%. My question is, what happens to 1%? Unless my question is not very much relevant, but I'm always very much concerned if people come up with a school which does not focus on the person, especially these other people, education must maybe lead the way. Like in Gauteng province, I think whatever you have given has totaled 101%, unless if I'm mistaken, I think famous Western Cape and Northwest has 99%. That's my first confusion. You know, once I'm confused, I've got a very serious challenge. I will not follow, right? It will confuse me from the beginning. But let me ask you other questions. The difficulty every three levels that you mentioned, I think I agree with you. That's a you see, when we look at this thing, we might look at the language of instruction chosen in this country. But I have not seen or heard the Department of Education debating the language of instruction. I don't think you can expect a closer type or a canine type to perform excellent English first if I'm learning in Afrikaans. I mean, Afrikaans is not even my language. But I found both of these, you see, we fought in this country so that we can go and stay wherever we want. Now, I'm staying in a place where previously learners there received education in, let's talk of our ex-Modern C. Maybe ex-Modern C school. Now, everybody goes there. But the language remains the language of yesterday. And at the end of the year, we cannot expect learners to perform perfectly if they are using a language which is strange even to themselves. And the question is, what is the Department of Education proposing as a factor? Because we can see until we are blue in the eye and sitting with debate in Parliament. I want to check if the issue of language is taken. I didn't hear it in the report, unless if I missed it. Another question that I want to ask you. Your self-assessment. I know that educators allow learners to assess themselves. I think it's a fail. According to me, that's excess. I mean, if you assess yourself, next time you know exactly this is why I made a mistake. Say that when learners have been given an exercise or something, because we're talking of the results as the first level and we're coming with conditions. So that if learners assess themselves, if it can be promoted, I think it's good, except maybe in say, because you cannot assess yourself in, but these other things, not exchanging books and, because those things we may not talk about them yet, they may result in not improving the results of your country. I didn't say anything about it. Your Honor, in lower grades, grade 11, I think it's excellent. Because all along, I talk of the 35 years that I taught in school. Learners were marked by different teachers from grade R to 11. And all of a sudden, they sit for one exam and they are marked at a certain particular center. And different people are employed there and they're receiving a salary for that. I would say it's the only time when there's fair assessment. All along, if I'm a person who I read a story which is very, I wanted to use a question, a word which is not very parliamentary, but a story which is not, which is not convincing, to put it very simple, or very intelligent. And but the person who's marking also, the understanding is not as that. But at the end of the day, if this marking was done right through, if it's that, because I believe your honor is now bringing us to marking at different levels, if I understand it correctly, not only starting at the first. And that I would definitely applaud and believe is going to change the results of this country. You and also blessed that you are coming with solutions. You didn't come here with a lot of challenges. You said this is how I'm going to solve 1, 2, 3. And what? You have solutions. We can expect better results. I think. We definitely can expect better results. You talk of the present of past. I was interested in the future. Because we can talk about what happened last year and all these years when people decided to teach other people differently. Now that thing has changed in South Africa, can we be assured by the Department of Education that our future is bright? Because we need to hear that from you. We don't want the Department of Education to come here and be like surprised like us. We expect the graph to go up as far as the results are concerned, and we need that that enthusiasm to record from the I don't know if I'm trying to be political or silo. Or philosophical, some people speak. I want to pretend I'm a philosopher. And sometimes when you speak, people may not understand what you want to say, and it means a lot of things. Finally, how many schools? There was one district senior manager who wanted to know from all the inspectors at one particular corner of this world, how many learners are in your circuit? You know, you say, I'm not very sure, I say, you speak, you're not doing any job. you must know exactly how many learners are in your circuit, how many schools are in your circuit. And I want to believe, now that we are seated here, in Canada, we may meet people who want to know how many schools are in South Africa. And we don't know, because when you come here, you want us to go into the computers to get those things and stuff. Sometimes some of us were born before those computers and we need information given to us. It's very interesting and it's very important that the next time we meet with you, you tell us how many learners. Just to know that. It's far at the beginning of the in South Africa. We know that they will start being addressed and that they proceed. Some will be lost, but we are very much interested in the number of. Because maybe there is a book with these things and the chapter will say we didn't go to that book.
So it's a lot, honorable member. I'm not going to tell you down there.
Thank you. Because that's great.
Thanks, Chair. And I also wish to extend my appreciation for the comprehensive presentation. But my question relates to, I've just identified three issues of limitation. The first limitation states that it appears that in some instances professors are not from the skills they were supposed to be. And that would have affected them for high salaries. And then the other one that I have identified is about Christians that proved to be inadequate for the magnitude of his study, resulting in some data not being available on time for analysis. Now my question is, are these limitations not punching holes on both the analysis process and the conclusions that you come to? If that is not the case, how have you made up in your analysis and conclusion for these limitations that you stated? I'm not trying to say research reports which have no limitations. My second question relates to learner performance results. Grade 3, all provinces on numeracy scored more on numeracy than on literacy than numeracy. That is grade 3. And then grade 6, except for the Eastern Cape, all provinces have scored more on numeracy than on literacy. But of course, I don't know whether these are used interchangeably because the language and math now are grade 6. So, what could explain this? There is more, scores are higher for literacy in grade 3, and scores are higher for mathematics in grade 6. Those are all, that's all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll also be like my neighbor here. Chair, we must first admit that our system for a long time now has been very weak, to put it that way. And the ANA score results are a symptom of such a sick system, and that's why we sort of welcome these results and scores, because they show us where the sickness lies. Having said that, we must also agree that with the saying, who says, there is no system of education which is better than the teacher. Therefore, it leads me to say, to add that what is the department envisages doing to improve the system will depend on the last segment in the next step. For instance, you say that the principals will enter into performance contract with clear performance targets. That would greatly help the system, in fact. And because, remember, the whole thing started to crumble when the authority of Amasa Rasimo Prabhupada was undermined. And this was accompanied by lack of accountability right in that level. But my question is, they've already tested what you investors doing with unions, with everybody else. What has been the reaction of principals themselves? When you are going to have contract performance with them, there might be some other argument from them, which are going to know, and also with second managers, where you are going to have a performance agreement. Have you tested this with them? What has been their reaction? And lastly, you say, as your next step, you assure that school management is led by competent staff. That's a very welcome statement by the department. Does it suggest admission that up to now our system has been led by incompetent staff? Or to put it differently, how are you as a department going to influence the policy of deployment? Because frankly, that policy of deployment has done damage to the system of education, where incompetent people have been deployed to positions that they cannot manage. People from level one are jumped into second managers, principals. People don't prove themselves down there. I remember during my time, I would never be promoted as a principal if, for instance, my school was doing back. I would never. The principal would be somebody who has proved himself to be competent. But my question is, with this good intention, how are we going to influence that policy of deploying incompetent people?
Thanks a lot. My question seems to some preempting report that has come to be part of the report.
I don't know, immediately back up some intimidation. So this is when I talk about deployment as having a negative
effect. That's okay. I think members of the ICE themselves will still have another report. Before I give you, there's just an preemptive report that I want to speak very fast about. You all document a silence on inclusive education and special schools. A person don't see anything when it comes to you know, like your limitation and what are you going to do next. Because when it comes to those two categories of schools, they have problems when it comes to ANA. And that's what we discovered. They do not receive the examination papers on time. Because when it comes to Braille, you know, the blind, it has to be adapted. Because you speak about your pictures. A blind person don't see that picture at all. So adaptation will have to take place. So I just wanted to speak briefly, you know, to inclusive education. Because you're definitely silent when it comes to your limitations and your next steps. And then the other thing is that I just will link up with our Uncle Kusana's monitoring and evaluation. There is talk within the Metro of Port Elizabeth that there is circular that when it comes to ANA, a person can see it is compulsory that they give in schools choices. So those are little things that you should know. You know, what is happening at district level? and you know where do such instructions come from? Because I just asked the person that stopped me to give me the circular, that a person can see what is written in the circular. Because if there's such instruction, that means it comes from province. So we have to know what is happening on the ground. And then when it comes to what the Honourable Mushwana spoke to, will be on page 15, where you've got to learn a performance at the specific level. I think it's here if you add up, that thing don't go to 100%, it goes to 99 or 101. Honourable Makubera.
Rising on this point raised by Honourable Mpacham, referring to a policy in education of some cater development. I don't know about it. So I'm looking for the list somewhere and it may be out now. And I'm just saying it would be wrong to push for responses on things that are not there. You know, and cause people to try and give us responses here when we know such things don't exist anymore. You know, our just question one is trying to say, I don't think we're going to qualify, I don't know if it's there could be some work that we can deliver.
And I try and thank Honourable Makubele. You know, for just reminding me about it, knowing what the two of you are talking, you know, is the CAGA deployment within education.
Well, we say when the cat fits, one must wear it. That's how that might have been.
Fine.
Seriously, if you want to improve things in education, you must be honest with ourselves. We deal with districts, we deal with relatively problems. There are instances where people, incompetent people, as the department at least, have been promoted not on their competence, but on political affiliation. If you don't admit that ill, in the system of education you continue to take. And I didn't even say deployment by whom, I didn't even mention the parties involved. But people now, because they know what's happening, they want to defend the indefensible.
I'm not going to put open this for discussion, because no one is trying to defend. So I just commend when people like everyone to know, yeah, there's no policy on it. So I'm not going to open it for discussion, but like you say, you know, it's not all. A person has a chance to incompetency, a person has a. And you're not using the word some, you're just generalizing. Thank you. I'd like the department, don't take notice of us on this. You just speak to us administratively, not politically. And if you're going to speak to us politically, I'll tell you when I'll give you a rally. But I don't want to see my meeting. We can politicize on this side. Thank you. May you answer, Mr. Paraci?
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair. Dr. Bolia will respond, but I would like him, and then I will cover the areas he hasn't covered. But there are questions that have been raised that we may not be able to provide a response today, as we can provide those areas we do not cover in writing. As they cover other branches outside our, that have worked, which have the details. But I think Dr. Bolia will start, and where he hasn't covered those areas, I will then address.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and thank you very much for those very interesting comments. I must say that I sat here and listened very attentively to the comments and the questions that are being raised. And I must say that as much as we work with annual national assessment on a daily basis, we are also learning in terms of how this process needs to be managed and administered. And then one cannot say that, you know, we have arrived. And therefore, your inputs are extremely valuable. And all they will do is that they will enhance our understanding and therefore our administration and implementation. So thank you very much. So the answers and responses I'm going to give are not necessarily the final word on whatever has been mentioned, but it's just our view, and my GDG will add where I do not provide the kind of holistic response. In terms of marking, honorable member, thank you very much, because, and I think you very aptly worded it, and I've written it down here. I'm going to make sure I repeat this in future, but I will make sure that I acknowledge where it comes from. That some learners are possibly failed at the marking center. Because if you look at marking is actually a process of judgment. It's like a judge sitting in court and making the final decision. That's what a marker does. And we need to make sure that every marker, whether he's in the school or whether at a marking center, has the knowledge and the competency to make the judgment. And unfortunately, we know that there are areas in our teachers. Because if you're not a good teacher, then you cannot be a good judge, you cannot be a good marker. So it's a process. And therefore I think Mr. Padiachi has in fact requested us to explore the option of setting up centralized marking centers for ANA. And we can possibly do this for 3, 6, and 9, where we appoint markers, we train you, we discuss the marking guidelines, it's done under control conditions. It's going to be extremely expensive, but I think it's a cost that we need to pay if we want quality outcomes out of this particular process. So it's certainly an issue we're taking very seriously in terms of marking, and we will ensure that we don't come back to you to say that this was a limitation. But also what I want to say, and I think honorable member has raised the issue about, we've raised all these limitations. What is the impact of these limitations on the results? And just to take us one step back, we spoke about the verification ANA and the universal ANA. Now the verification ANA was carried out under controlled conditions. In other words, the procedure that was followed in its administration was controlled. The marking was done by the teacher in the classroom and then remarked by the external body. So the data we are giving you here comes from the verification ANA and not the universal. I did present the universal ANA data, but I said this is universal data. So the data we're giving you, we are confident, has been carried out under control condition, and the limitations that we refer to in the slide refer to the universal ANA, the one that was carried out across the whole country. So I think we are fairly confident of the data that we're presenting to you. Then the administration of the instrument, honorable member, I think is also a critical item, that it must be same at each school. Now, the model that we are implementing in exams, which I hope you'll support us with, is what we call the McDonald's model. Now, with the McDonald's model, you can buy a burger in Mexico, you can buy a burger in Zanin, in Limpopo, or you can buy a big burger in Cape Town. A burger is a burger is a burger. And that's the model we want to follow with exam and assessment, to say that our conditions of administration must be like a McDonald's burger. And maybe the cost may be slightly different, but the final outcome, because learners must not be disadvantaged simply because of varying conditions. So it's an issue we're dealing with. In terms of the data, I think what I want to clarify there, honorable member, is you're correct. You see, when we provided the stat, we should have presented it to you with the decimal. For example, if you're looking at the Eastern Cape, it should be 45.2. And then if you take the partially achieved, it should be 17.8. So if you add the decimal, it will give you 100. So what we've done is we've dropped the decimal. And because we've dropped the decimal, you'll get 99 in some. And in others where we've rounded off, you may end up with 101. But we want to apologize for that. We should have come to this house with figures that add up to 100. Given the fact that we've dropped the decimal. But we will correct that. And I think the point that was also raised by the honorable member, our analysis must be simple, so that we can sell the final analysis to teachers and even to parents. Because we believe that parents play a vital role. And we say, that's the process we've started. And we're going to come up with simple documents which will highlight, these are the problems, and this is what needs to be done by teachers, this is what needs to be done by parents, this is what needs to be done by public advice to remedy the problem and deal with that. Socio-economic conditions, I think that's spot on. You know, we can do as much as we want in terms of having the best test, in terms of having good teaching, but if we don't address the socio-economic conditions, a learner that comes to school from a squatter camp with an empty stomach is not going to produce good results at a school. And I think that's what government is doing as a whole. We're dealing with both socio-economic factors as well as some of the educational factors. But unfortunately, some of the socio-economic factors are so intricate and complex that it's going to take us longer to be able to address. But I agree with you that in testing, unfortunately, you cannot say that I'm going to take note of the socioeconomic conditions and give this learner who's coming from a squatter camp a slightly different test from a learner who's coming from Houghton. I think testing has to be fair. But when we analyze the result, we must analyze it in terms of the context and know that this learner could have done poorly simply because he didn't have breakfast that morning, or he was not able to study last night because he does not have electricity. Interventions must be immediate. And I must say, members, that many of these interventions that I'm referring to are already being implemented, they're ongoing. What had happened is that, remember, the tests were administered in February, they were marked by the teacher, and learners got their results immediately. So from March already, teachers have been working on the outcome of ANA. Obviously, and I think the critical point that was raised, is that you can't expect that teachers all across the country are implementing remedial measures. We have to monitor, both at national level, at provincial level, at district level, to make sure that the remedial measures are being implemented. And your question about standardization, thank God there will be no standardization, simply because we say this is not an assessment that leads to certification. We are not determining whether learners are going to go to higher education, like in the case of the matric, but it's merely a diagnostic tool. So we want to know what the problems are. And I think the DDG will respond on, you know, the practical side of implementation in terms of infrastructure, libraries, and the like. Language of instruction, I think I need to add, honorable members, that in the case of learners in grades 1, 2, and 3, they wrote the test in their mother tongue. Okay? And only in grade 4, intermediate phase, did they now write the test in either English or Afrikaans. So I agree with you. Language is fundamental. And we need to deal decisively. And therefore, I think ministers made the statement that we are going to implement the language of learning and teaching in grade 1. So at least the learners are not going to be accounting the language of learning and teaching for the first time in grade 4. In terms of peer assessment, I think maybe we need a little bit of clarification there, Chair, because I don't think there's peer assessment at the lower grade. And I think Honourable Member mentioned that as well, that possibly higher up you can ask learners to exchange pieces of work and assess each other, but that does not happen at the lower level. I think we spoke about standardized marking and the fact that we're now starting with this lower down, Honourable Member, simply means that we dealing with the problems lower down and not waiting for grade 12. I think that point is taken. We dealt with the statistics. And I think just to say, Honourable Member, that we do have the statistics that you're looking for, and there are a number of documents that the department produces which provides the statistics in terms of number of schools, number of learners, but just for problems. And maybe we could also make that available. Yeah, the question about why is it that all PEDs have performed better in literacy than in numeracy, except in grade 6, where it's the other way around. Now, we can understand why learners generally tend to do better in literacy, because it has to do with communication. Learners speak, and therefore they do better in literacy. But numeracy is mathematics, and therefore learn a struggle. But why does it, you see the flip side in grade 6, honorable member, all I can tell you is that we are further investigating that phenomenon, and we will report back to you once we've investigated further. So in other words, what is happening in grade 6 that learners are doing better in numeracy than in literacy? In terms of performance agreements, our GDG will respond. And in terms of inclusive education, honorable chair, I can say that we did Braille papers for our special schools. Papers were adapted and Braille. But I agree with you that there were some schools, because you know the statistics were not correct, would mean that they did not get the exact number of papers. And remember, Brailing, you can't go and copy. If the paper was short, that there were problems. But we've taken note of all of those problems, and we'll also have papers adapted for those who are hard of hearing and the like. So I think inclusive education is a priority of government, and we will continue to deal with it. Chair, that's as far as I could recall in terms of the points that I've noted. But if there's an area that we've not covered, my DEG will add.
Mr. Padarchi?
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll start with one of your points that on the inclusive aid, while there were problems experienced with the papers, provision was made to Braille and adapt the papers. And I think we would look at the results of those particular schools that have written and analyze them and provide you also with that detail as it becomes available. With regard to the performance agreement, we will provide more details, but we need to indicate that this is at the Education Labor Relations Council and is being discussed between the department and the trade unions in order to reach finality on that matter. And I think in time the department would come to, or may have presented when it was in Pretoria, on the quality and learning and teaching campaign as well. So if there are further details you require, you can make that request and the relevant officials can be made available to present to you. I think on the issue of the system, it's something that we are addressing for the next ANA. But what was clear was that while we have essay stamps, LURUS, and that we have made provision for ANA to be put on what was referred to as the Excel spreadsheet, that the difference, I'm not an IT person, but the different systems didn't speak to each other. While data was there, they could not be uploaded and so forth. And therefore, on the universal ANA, then that became an issue that to use the data that was available would not give us a reliable indicator. So we are very confident about the verification because the service provider was the HSRC. And as we indicated, there's no standardization. We have not did anything different from what the HSRC had provided us. There was just an analysis of that. And on the universal, while all the data was not available, it does tell a picture. It does give us a picture and a story to tell on that, and that's why we do provide that. In using universal, it would have given us a false picture because the scores are higher than the verification. And it would have led to a false sense of security that we may be doing better, but in reality, it's not the case. So I think that is why the universal is not in the report, and therefore a direct comparison between the universal and the verification cannot be made. It will lead to some unreliable conclusions at the end of the day. I think in the next presentation, we'll address the issue of the infrastructure, and I think in this week the department has released a report dealing with issues of dropout and the number of people attending educational institutions. I think that report is on the website. We'll also make available the latest figures that we are going to be releasing on the issue of enrollment as of the 10th day. We have got the approval for it. We have just got that to be printed, and it will also be put on the website before the end of this month. So I think you will get that information. And in terms of the verification, it was 100 schools per grade, which is 900 for literacy, another 900 for numeracy in grade 3, and the same applied to grade 6, and that was for the verification. But what is clear is that the exercise we had undertaken we're not perfect. We've identified the areas where they need to be beefing up and strengthening, and that actually the ANA is about 12 times bigger than the metric hectare. And we've actually put in discussions as to the plan for the next ANA, which I think when we've got the approval for it, we will come back to the committee and provide details of it.
Thanks a lot. Another thank you follow up. And whatever is outstanding, Luella made note of it, and we expect that from the department itself. Thank you. We must go to the next presentation, and that is the school infrastructure team. Thank you. We're going to do that.
Thank you, Chair. The Director for Physical Planning and Resources, Mr. Mafoko, will make the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good day to honorable members. The presentation, Chair, would try to respond to the questions that were raised, specifically to what other interventions are there in other provinces in relation to particularly the school infrastructure delivery. But the presentation goes even further to provide a progress on the whole infrastructure program relating to ACIDI as well as to the infrastructure grant as it is implemented in province. Starting first of all, Chair, with ACIDI, just a little bit of background just to indicate what the Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative is about. I don't think this slide is foreign, it has been used for a number of times. The focus would be to provide schools with water, sanitation, and electricity or fencing. Also to ensure that schools that are constructed from inappropriate material and are a danger to learners are provided with facilities, and also to provide critical teaching and learning spaces in those identified schools. And also maybe just to mention here, when we talk about prioritized critical teaching and learning spaces, it refers to issues to spaces like libraries, laboratories, in those schools that are built from inappropriate material. As we provide a new structure to replace the inappropriate structure, we will provide that school with all the facilities that constitute a school, like your libraries and laboratories and so on. The focus of ACIDI for the 2010 to 2014 strategic planning period is to provide basic functionality. As I have indicated, providing water, sanitation, and electricity, replacing entire inappropriate structures. This is important to emphasize that in the process of prioritizing, we realize that in some instances you would have a school that would have one classroom or one storeroom that is constructed of inappropriate material. So in the process of prioritizing, we had to start somewhere. And we said we will prioritize those schools where the whole campus of a school is built out of inappropriate material, and then we will go on gradually to those schools that have lesser and lesser facilities, because we have to start somewhere. We cannot simply eat that whole elephant at the same time. Then also to replace the entire 395 mark schools in the system case, and also to upgrade schools to optimum functionality by providing core spaces like your libraries, laboratories, I have referred to them. To give just a bit of progress on the inappropriate structures, as we have mentioned in the previous presentation to the committee chair, for this financial year, we have been allocated an amount of 700 million for the ACIDI program. And we will be building 50 schools, or replacing 50 math schools, first of all, in the Eastern Cape. And just to give a bit of progress, that we have signed a memorandum of agreement with the DBSA, the Development Bank of South Africa, as the implementing agent in the Eastern Cape for the first batch of the 50 mark school. And we have started with the process of stakeholder engagement. Of importance is that the first 50 schools are situated in Umtata, Libore, and Lusikisiki districts, and the implementing agent has been introduced to those districts, and the process of scoping and design has already started in those. I have indicated that the process of preliminary scoping, site verification, and so on, that process has started, and the PSPs, professional service providers, will be appointed also to do detailed scoping and finalize the design for those schools. As well as also today, the 16th of August, the request for proposals for the appointment of pre-qualified contractors has gone out today. The pre-qualification, perhaps just to indicate, Chair, that the process that we are following is that the contractors that we will be appointing, we will be going on what we call a turnkey solution. They will be doing design and develop kind of work for us. So we will be pre-qualifying contractors for those 50 schools, and as soon as the designs have been completed, they will be continue to do also the construction of those 50 schools that we have identified in those main districts. And we have also identified additional 21 schools in the area of Jutra, Tumbu, Tata, and the Sikisiki. So all in all, we will be doing 71 schools in this financial year over and above that. But the purpose of the presentation, Chair, was to indicate to the committee in other provinces what is happening with regard to achievement. With reference to inappropriate structures, I have indicated that we will be doing those 71 schools in those districts that we have mentioned. And the reason for that is that the majority of schools, we have identified about 395 schools in the Eastern Cape only, that are constructed of marks. And that is why the reason to start in the Eastern Cape. But in the next financial year, we have identified additional 437, including the remaining in the Eastern Cape, 437 structures that will be dealt with in the subsequent 2 years. Of notice here is that we realize that the majority of schools are still in the Eastern Cape. We have 378 schools still in the Eastern Cape, which is 22 are constructed of metal, 343 are constructed of mud, 13 are wood schools, or what you call your plank school. And we have 11 schools in the Free State, 9 in Gauteng, mostly two of those schools are wood, and 7 are metal schools. And you see there are 4 schools in KZN, 5 in Limpopo, 5 in Mpumalanga, 2 in the Northwest, 1 in the Northern Cape. And you still have a large number of wood schools in the Western Cape. And that totals to 437. What is currently happening here is that this list of schools has been sent to provinces with the due date this Friday. The provinces would just verify that indeed these schools are mass school or wood school or metal schools, such that we have that collaboration with provinces. We don't impose from the national department that these are the schools that we are going to do. So the provinces would be verifying that and say, indeed, we agree with your list. And from there, this list would be given to the implementing agent to start the work of developing a design such that at the beginning of the next financial year, these are the schools that we will be doing up until the end of the subsequent year in 2014. So this, in answering the question, in terms of inappropriate structures, these are the schools that we will be doing in other provinces. And Chair, if need be, we will provide the committee with the name of extra schools that we are talking about in this summary. Then with reference to basic services, in this financial year only, we will be doing 354 sanitation projects and 188 water projects. These projects are spread as indicated in this slide with the budget for each province. You have, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, 161 sanitation projects, 94 water projects, and 37 electricity projects. To mention this, Chair, that basic services projects in this case exclude schools that are referred to as inappropriate structures. So this is over and above the 71 schools that I mentioned in the Eastern Cape. So in this financial year, we will be doing schools in all the provinces providing basic services. The target, remember, is that by 2014, all our schools should be having these basic services in sanitation, water, and electricity. Now, the process is that we have entered into an agreement with the service provider. The process of verification and appointment of contractors is currently going on in all the nine provinces that we speak. But also to mention that provinces like your Western Cape, Gauteng, and Free State, Northern Cape, as well as KwaZulu-Natal, they will be using their own tax they will be using their own implementing agents on this particular project, and they will be claiming that money from the national department through the process that we have developed. Now, in terms of the remainder, in terms of basic services, we still have 714 schools that would benefit from this program in 2012-13 and 2013-14, 410 schools that will still receive sanitation, and 969 schools that would get water. So that is spread all over the other provinces. And so you realize that from our analysis is that Gauteng and Western Cape, we expect that by the end of this financial year, all the schools in these two provinces will have been provided with this basic services. And we are looking at making sure that by the end of the next financial year, we have provided all the remaining schools with water, sanitation, and electricity. Now, progress in terms of electricity, to start with. In the Eastern Cape, for this financial year, 104 schools have been hosted, and they are going to be provided with electricity. In the Free State, 31 schools were identified to be provided with electricity. 5 have already been electrified. In 16 of those schools, these are farm schools, and we found out that there is no agreement between the department and the landowner. This is what we call Section 14 schools that are in private property. So what we are doing is to assist the department, the Free State Department, to expedite those agreements between the farmers such that we assist those schools and provide them with electricity. 9 schools have an enrollment of less than 30. We are also engaging with the province to find out what processes are there, whether these schools are going to be closed or these schools are going to be met. As you are aware, there is a process of moving learners into hostels in the Free State. We have to find out from the province if there is any such arrangement. If not, then we will definitely provide these schools with electricity and one school is closed. The same process relates to other provinces. In Limpopo, 25 have been identified, 15 have been electrified, 2 are closed, and 4 will be connected. And Mpumalanga, 66 identified, 17 have been electrified already. The same thing with Mpumalanga, that 3, there is no agreement between the landowner and the department, and we will go ahead and connect 46 remaining schools. In relation to the monitoring, Chair, I hope I'm not moving too fast. In relation to the monitoring part, we are establishing what we refer to as a program support unit in the DBP. That is to get technical people who would assist the department in the monitoring of the work that is done by all this implementing agents. Just to indicate, the technical unit would be led by an engineer. It will have an architect, a quantity surveyor, and several project managers. Now, this team would be the technical arm of the ABE that would go out and monitor the work that is done by implementing agents to ensure that the money that we are going to pay, indeed the work has been done, and the work that has been done down there is of quality. So we have commissioned the Development Bank of South Africa to appoint this program support unit for us, and we expect that in a week or two this unit would be in place. As I indicated, Chair, the next slide is just to indicate over and above ASIDI, we do have also the responsibility of managing the infrastructure budget in provinces. And that indicates in that slide that we have a budget of about 8.7 billion that is managed by provinces through the infrastructure grant as well as through the equitable share by provinces. In the first quarter of this financial year, 22% of that 8.7 billion had been spent by provinces. And this is 3% less than what was expected. However, there are several areas of concern. If you look at provinces like the Eastern Cape, where only 7% was spent in the whole of the first quarter, we are engaging in the province to find out what is the problem and what led to this low spending. Just to indicate to the committee, what we have picked up, first of all, is that work is going on the ground, but there are challenges in relation to the payment processes in the province, and we are assisting the province to unbottleneck those bottlenecks. And that is one issue that led also to the same low spending in the province amongst others, low spending in the same province in the last financial year. That led to many contractors leaving site because they were not paid. And it looks like we are having the same kind of a problem cropping up in this financial year in that province. You have provinces like the Free State and Gauteng, where there is also low spending, 16% on both sides, and the Northern Cape, 11%. We are looking at what are the challenges. But then also you have provinces that are moving a little bit too fast. You have Mpumalanga that is at 44% already, against the expected 25% in the first quarter, and Limpopo that is already at 36%. If these provinces move at this pace, they are going to exhaust their budget and be unable to pay their contractors towards the end of the financial year. So we have to find out what is happening. Just to indicate, for instance, in provinces like Mpumalanga, what we have seen that is that they started with paying accruals from the previous financial year, and that has an effect on the project that they have to start in this financial year. So we'll have to look into that and try and assist them to make sure that they stress their project properly so that they do not have that challenge of having to pay previous year's project with this year's money, and then it has a cyclical effect going forward. You know, so that would mean that next year they will have to use this next year's money to pay for this year's project, and it will be a vicious cycle. So we'll have to sit down and assist them to get rid of that. These are the targets, Chair, that we received from the provinces. You realize that the Eastern Cape, we have more targets. The reason being, the infrastructure plan, when we finalized this, was not yet approved as a result of some challenges that we have to the infrastructure plan. But in all other provinces, we receive targets. In fact, we will be receiving those targets by the end of this week from the Eastern Cape. But that indicates, for instance, that in new schools, you'll be having this number of teaching spaces, administrative spaces, and so on, that will be provided in this financial year. That is in new schools. And you also have the next slide that shows the targets in existing schools in this financial year. That is what provinces are projecting with the 8.7 billion that they have in their budget, that they are going to be doing this. And we will be monitoring and seeing if indeed they are going to meet this target. For the first quarter, for instance, just to indicate, we are using what we call the infrastructure reporting model, the IRM, to indicate what has been provided, for instance. what we have picked up is that the majority of work is with regard to your classrooms. For instance, a lot of money has been allocated towards fencing in provinces. A lot of money has been allocated to the provision of classrooms, both in combined primary and secondary schools, as well as the provision of specialized rooms. 1,456 specialized rooms will be provided. And this is the amount of money that has been spent in the first quarter only in relation to those places, as indicated in the infrastructure reporting model. With regards to monitoring and evaluation, which is our last slide here, the project list from provinces have been posted on the PBE website. That was that. These project lists were gazetted. The summary that I have indicated, the whole list is on the DBE website that indicates what is the province going to do in this financial year. So if you go into the DBE website documents, it will take you to those air province, to the list of projects that the province are going to be doing in the financial year. This is to promote accountability so that provinces and know that the public has got access to what they are promising to be going to be doing. We will conduct monitoring on projects through the PSU. As I have indicated, the PSU is in the process of being constituted. And also, we will be visiting sites on a sample basis from projects captured in the infrastructure reporting model. But we have also constituted what we call PPMT, Provincial Planning and Monitoring Team. That will also monitor projects at the provincial level. So we'll have the national team that will be doing the monitoring on what the work that has been done at the first provinces. The PSU itself will also be doing monitoring at a technical level from the national department, but you'll also be having provincial monitoring teams. So you'd have a three-pronged kind of monitoring to ensure that what is happening in provinces is properly monitored. And then we'll be triangulating those reports coming from these three units to ensure that there is uniformity in terms of the three reports that we get, and ensure that, because in most instances in the past we find that provinces bring reports to us, but when you go on the ground, what you get on the report is not necessarily what is happening on the ground. So we'll be getting reports from three different sites to ensure that we get to a clear indication of what is happening.
Members, are there any questions that you'd like to ask? Honorable Mponshana, Honorable Mani, Honorable Mushwana, Sultana, and then Hanyako. Thank you. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Francis, I have a request. There's been two reports issued by I think the first one was 1997 on the reality down on the ground. I think 3 years later, the department issued another report. I think one could have those two reports in order to compare and also to appreciate the progress that the department has made. The second one, under inappropriate structures, is the question. Are these numbers, final numbers? I'm looking at what the town has got, only four inappropriate structures. And I'm just thinking of this such a vast. To me, that would just be just a district. And also, you look at Northern Cape, only one. If that's the case, really, it's tremendous progress. Are these numbers final? Or have it been verified? Thank you. Let's see. Mine relates to schools in the mine. I've not heard anything about those schools, or possibly are they classified as some schools? Just want to find out. Thanks.
thank you. Honourable Trana.
Thank you, Professor. Only one question on the infrastructure extension was of the first quarter. One is checking if what we get here of the first quarter usually informs what we get at the end of the year. Because if people for the whole quarter expect 7%, for example, Eastern Cape, can they definitely deal with the 93% remaining during the so that is there no law that states that you should reduce 25% of your allocation by the end of the first year, so that at the end of the year the money is utilized. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I just want to check with the department. The budget, the infrastructure budget is presented here. Is it a budget which is controlled by provinces or the budget which is directly in the national department? That's point number one. Point number two, 2%. The expenditure of Eastern Cape, which is 7%. I just want to check, is it the provincial department that has spent this money or the intervention team? Nationally or what? And thirdly, I wanted clarity on the issue of Mpumalanga. The unpayment of debt in the current budget. What happened at that particular problem? Because when you pay something which is the debt, then which means the productivity is supposed to for the legacy. What happened? Is there any report that we can get exactly of what happened?
Honorable Kanyasa, and then we'll come to Andre next door.
You can come first.
All right, you can go first. You say you can go first, sir?
No, thanks, it's just on the time of the two pages. On time. The second one, on administrative space, most of the provinces there have given a similar number of various units, be it on the space or strong room, photocopying room, staff room, and so on. Why is it like that? I know at times you may need photocopying machine perhaps in a particular room, but it can't just be that in almost all the provinces the numbers will be the same for three or four of those.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on the page that deals with basic services on sanitation, I'm a little confused with the figures there. I don't know if they are correct. The Eastern Cape is 161 projects, if I'm correct. I think they're on the same page. And then in KwaZulu-Natal, you have 60 projects. But when you look at the amount there, the budget, you know, for 161 projects, we have 45 million. And for 60 projects, we have 42 million. To me, I don't know what could be operating there. So maybe you could explain why would you have a thing like this, where you have more projects than the amount, and then the smaller projects almost the same amount as the amount for the bigger projects. And then the second one is on progress first quarter facilities. I see you have here FDT colleges 125, but my question is, are you dealing with maybe my ignorance, because in my mind the FDT colleges fall under higher education. Now if you have it here, let me get a little confused, or maybe there has been some change a few weeks ago. FDT colleges are now under basic education, I don't know. So just want to know what is happening. Changes are very fast.
You can you might just talk to your mom.
Thank you. My question for you, I'm so interested in the inappropriate structure. Because it do look loud to me. Because you look at like the northern areas of each province, then you're going to find these inappropriate structures, now the prefab, and they don't fall under wood or metal, and they're over 50 years old, and the lifespan is 15 years. And I think you do get it in some township areas too. So it's very important that they have the correct tickets there. Then I was interested in the accruals too, because here we do accrual accounting. And, you know, I'm 100% sure, you know, that they were outstanding projects, because previously projects had to be decommitted. And then, you know, a rollover has been done if they really want to give it. And then the other one, I'm coming for the last week. The revitalization of technical high schools, where does that fall in? Because I know there's amount for every province, you know, for revitalization of technical high schools, and it's not being done. Then when it comes to your policy, when it comes to norms and standards, the many norms and standards, what of infrastructure, what is the status at the moment? And if there is a legal case against the court now in connection with it, you don't answer. But if there's none, you answer. Thank you.
Yes,
a small one, a small omission. I see here you speak of metal material there. I'm a little confused. Are you referring to a container? Because in some places you see containers with first classes. Or buses, old buses. You find an old bus that has been thrown away and it keeps going there. I've seen that. I don't know if you are referring to the other metal or the outdated students and not regarded as a part of the school.
Yeah.
Well,
Mr. Padachi.
Chair, I will start. I'll take four of them and then Makoko will deal with the others. I just want to start with the Honorable Moshwana's question about the first quarter and having a provision in place of particular ratios for spending. I would like to separate the issue of the Eastern Cape with the other eight provinces. In that, with the other eight provinces and the approach we are taking, that all infrastructure is basically of interest to the national department, and therefore we need to have information and reasons as to why we are in a particular position and where there are issues that have to be dealt with. How do we then ensure that we support the province? And if the province cannot manage that on itself, how do we, as a national department, then ensure that the spending happens? As the underspending, in particular, has been identified as a priority by the minister and for us to address. In fact, we've undertaken a provincial visit to each of the departments to look at the issue of the budget. This is not only on infrastructure, but every other area of the line items that are crucial to the spending. And with the Eastern Cape, I think to link with the question that was asked, whether it was spent by DBE or whether it was the intervention team or whether it was the administration, what we can say is that we are not aware of that the intervention team has any control over the finances. And that was probably that the accounting officer is the head of the department. So that would have been spent by the province. Then onto the issue of which budgets are directed by DBE and the PED. I just would like to refer to indicate that all ECD money is under the jurisdiction of the DBE. While they will be spent in the provinces, these are payments that will be made directly to the implementing agent or the contracted company or whoever that has delivered the service based on the procedures that have been put in place for payment. So there is no transfer to any provincial department. There will be payments to DBSA, the implementing agent for sanitation and so forth based on delivery. the provincial funding is totally in the control of the province, is the equitable share of over 3.3 billion, and on the education infrastructure grant, the 5.5 billion. That is transferred by national treasury to the national department, who then makes quarterly transfer. And already the first quarter was split into two payments, and those two payments were made. There are conditions to that payment based on reporting and progress in that regard. And where the department identifies the lack of progress, we need to look at how we intervene and ensure that the blockages are removed. And not the issue of withholding. Withholding is an option, but in withholding, we need to ensure that delivery still occurs in some form or manner at the end of the day. So that 5.5 is not totally in the control of the DBE, but it's a transfer to the provinces, and I think we need to separate the interactions at the moment between the other 8 provinces where where we are working with them, and there are units that are in infrastructure that are capable of actually delivering the target and even exceeding it. But if we are able to exceed it and show delivery, we can go back to Treasury to look at how future funding could be brought forward. And the overspending is not based on an irresponsible action, which is not a managed one. So I think this year, that's what we're looking at, and I think if we have to fail, it would not be in the other 8. You can read between my lips. No, we would not fail in the other 8. On the SCD, we control that to the total extent. If there's underspending or overspending, we would explain for that by ourselves as a DBE. So I think that's the other. And then the question of the FET colleges, I was just as confused. But what I would like to say that this was my explanation given to me, that is the reporting model. We are not actually responsible for any FET college. We could go back and look at where that 71,000 was spent. It could be that the province owed the college something from a previous financial year. But we are not, out of any of our funds, supposed to basically deal with any FET college infrastructure. Then, Chair, to answer your question on the norms, I'm not even sure. I know there was an indication of a court action, so maybe I should, I'm not sure where the process is, so therefore, maybe I should not respond to it.
Thank you.
We did receive correspondence of an intention of a court action.
Fine, then we have to keep quiet. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to with regard to your FET colleges, if you look at the money that you spend, they very little. Those are your multi-year projects that started in the previous year. So promises are just concluding on those projects. So those are projects that started in the previous year before the money and then they are just being concluded. To the request for the school register of needs, we will provide that document to the honourable member. The figures, I indicated, honourable member, in the presentation that is why we have taken this number to the provinces for verification purposes. But also to explain that, we are saying, here we are starting with where is the whole school is a mass school. Then, as soon as we have concluded that, then we will go to the lower level. For instance, where you might find that maybe only 5% of the school is a mass school, then we replace one classroom or two classrooms, up to the point where we have dealt with the whole thing. So in this instance, what it says to us is that in KwaZulu-Natal, currently we have 4 schools that are entire wood or entire mass schools. And what is also important to mention, honourable members, is that you remember that in the previous year, there was an allocation that was made for the eradication of mass schools. Many of the provinces made significant progress in eradicating their mass schools and inappropriate structures, except in one province that is currently our biggest challenge. So in some of the provinces, there is work that is currently going on or those schools are already in the plans of the provinces to do those kinds of schools. So what we do is we exclude those schools because they are already budgeted for by the province. So for purposes of ACD, we take only those that provinces couldn't accommodate in their budget. And we will continue to assist provinces to finish off those schools that are remaining. But what we are also saying to provinces with the verification exercise is that go through the list that we are giving to you. If there are schools that we might have missed, because there is no system that is perfect, if there are schools that we might have missed, please make that indication to us so that we add those schools into our list and budget for them appropriately. The second issue, maybe also to deal with the Honorable Kanyako's issue around the containers for corrugated iron, what we are saying, a metal school is a school that is constructed of corrugated iron or metal of any kind. So those container schools are included as metal schools. Corrugated iron schools are included as metal schools. There are some schools that are prefabbed but using some kind of a metal material. We have included those schools as well. The question from Honorable Sasana around what happened in Mpumalanga. We were a little bit puzzled as well when we looked at the figures. And when we made an analysis and investigated, the fact of the matter is that if you look at the expenditure in the province in the last few financial years, the province has been doing very badly and underspending. In the last financial year, we intervened and assisted them in terms of planning and project management of those projects. That is when things started happening. But the truth of the matter is that their projects started moving towards the end of the financial year. So they had a lot of work that was happening towards the end of the financial year that has moved over into this financial year. They have requested the rollover, but remember, the rollover can only be paid at the appropriation budget. So they are using this year's money to start paying for that work that is now moving at a fast pace. That is why they are already at 44% now, with the hope that they will get that rollover. That is why we also caution them that, guys, don't rely on a rollover that has not been approved yet. You see, it's a dangerous thing to do. But we are working with them to assist them to manage this, as well as to make sure that planning for the next and the subsequent financial year is done properly so that they don't find themselves in this kind of situation again. And I think we are winning that kind of a battle. And also, Chair, the issue of prefects. The issue of prefects, in most instances, if we take an example of a province like Gauteng, Gauteng is providing what they call mobile schools. They are using prefects. But those are totally new. I remember in the last financial year, I think they built about 7 prefects, what they call mobile schools. So what we have realized is that in some instances, you find a prefect that is in a very good condition. And the province has budgeted to provide a permanent structure. So with regard to prefects, what we have decided to do is that the technical team will go and physically verify the condition of that prefect and advise the DBE to say this prefect is in a bad condition, it needs to be replaced. Or this one is still in a good condition, we can put it maybe in the next or the second year of the program. So with regard to prefects, we will be treating each and every school on a one-on-one basis, because we cannot come up with a blanket decision to say every prefect is going to be replaced. So we will rely on a technical analysis that we get from our technical team to advise us on those. So we are aware that in some provinces, for instance, in your Northern Cape, you've got quite a lot of prefect schools that are in a very bad condition. Obviously, when those technical reports come through, we will include them based on the technical report that we get from the team.
Can I just say something? You must remember the prefects that you get in certain areas. We speak about prefects of the previous regime at a school that was built, but it was not a permanent structure and it's standing there. Because you would really get, you know, like I take the Karoo, Kakadu, where the Honorable Minister comes from,
20. And you know, all those schools are falling apart. So I think, members, we have to try out the technical team, where we know there are such schools, you know, send it through to the department. Thank you.
The question on the administrative basis, why you have similar numbers. In actual fact, that is the advice that we give to provinces to say, if you are going to provide a library to a school and you move on to the next school, you provide a library there, then you come back maybe in 2 years' time, you come back to provide a laboratory to that school. That is not cost-effective project management. So what you need to do, if you are coming to a school, the school does not have a library, laboratory, computer center, provide that whole package at the same time. So what they we have assisted is that is why you find that in most instances, they have offices, storerooms, and so on. If the budget says 3, you look at the totality of the school, and when you go in there, you provide the whole package, you move out of that school, you don't have to come back to that school again. That is why you have these similar numbers in I'm not sure. Honorable Kanyako has already also mentioned the issue around KZN and Eastern Cape, the budget, why the budgets are almost, they are not tallying. I'm not sure if I have to mention the nonsense fanatic but what we are doing is the majority of schools in the Eastern Cape, especially in your deep rural area, are small schools. So we look at the number of learners, and that determines the number of toilet seats that you provide to a school, and that will determine the price that you pay for that. So in some instances, you find that in a small school, a school has got about 100 learners, you will provide maybe 3 toilet seats for boys and 2 for girls and so on. So that is why you have that kind of a difference. In three states, in KZN, then you find that you've got bigger schools, then you have to provide maybe 10 toilet seats per school and so on. That is what created that.
Who's in the mind?
The mines, yeah, and then the revitalization of the
system. Oh, yes. The schools in the mines, we have included this. I mean, where a school in the mine, if it's a public ordinary school, it is our school. So they are part of the program as well. Except, and that is why in some instances you would find what we have referred to as Section 14 schools. Those are schools that are public schools in private property that you will have to get an agreement between the landowner and the department. And if there is that case, I have mentioned in the presentation that if there is a situation where there is no agreement, we are not saying we are not providing the facilities, but we assisted the provincial department to facilitate the signing of an agreement between the landowner and the department, such that we provide those schools with those facilities that they need. Chair, the revitalization of technical high schools, I thought this view would bail me out.
Not a bailout, Chair, but basically we are, as a branch, we are not responsible for the to deal with the technical colleges. It's a conditional grant that the branch for curriculum manages. We can provide you with the details. We are aware that the program has performed poorly in the last year in terms of the spending, and there are plans in order to address that in this financial year, which includes putting in place project management capacity to assist the provinces in their planning and execution of the delivery of those projects.
Fine. I think what we have to do then, like you said, whoever's responsible, we need a report on this. That's number one. Then I think when it came to the projects that's been paid out of this year's financial budget, is it only Mpumalanga, or are there instances in other provinces? Is that just yesterday?
The majority share is in Mpumalanga, but remember, in all provinces you have multi-year projects. So that's not necessarily there. Where you find a situation where those projects have been budgeted for in the mafia problem. That is not a problem. But the majority of that, the challenge that we have picked up is in Mpumalanga. That is why they are overspending like that.
That will be okay. And then we need the reality report of 1997 and 2000. I think that's going to be important. And then there was just something that was worrying me when it comes to that bursary scheme that we spoke about previously of the teachers. I think we need to have a status report there. You know, you give us a breakdown of the number of bursaries that you gave. And then after you did the number of bursaries, the number that went through the system, and then the number, where are they now? Because I think the minister has a problem, she said, with certain provinces where these teachers are not placed. So that you can just see what is the status and see how can we help you. I think that is all for the morning. When it comes to the members, the reports we had was 34-1, and I said I'm keeping you to 4-1. When it comes to the reports and it comes to our minutes, we'll do that in next week's meeting. Yes. And then next week, remember, we're still going to have amendments, and I gave directions on the amendments because I expect us to pass it next week. Thank you. And then I think what will be important now to the Honourable Hanyako had a loss last week. And I think we'd like to sympathize with you on that loss. And you now feel three down because we didn't have it. But our sympathy is with you, sir. Thank you. Meeting closed.